Today.
Okay. Today is July 15th, 2021. This is the matter of conditional use application Z0165-21. I think it's also it's referenced as Hood Course LLC. And what's the name of the proposal? I had it two different ways. Anyway.
It's actually, if I can just interject, the owner is Hood Course LLC.
And that's all the references.
That's
Okay.
all. I don't know where the Mountain Shadows LLC came in. I noticed that in the comment, one of the comments
I
received.
just wanted to straighten it out. So Hood Course LLC works for me. My name again is Carl Cox. I'm a private attorney appointed by Clackamas County Board of Commissioners as hearings officer with authority to conduct this hearing and make a determination in this matter. Before the hearing begins, I'm going to have the county provide an explanation for participation via the Zoom platform. Then I will provide an explanation for the procedure, and I'll make an additional statement concerning the process for the hearing. I'll turn this to the county
All
for this.
right, thanks. I'll be brief. I'm just going to go over the Zoom process real quick. And I don't know why I'm so dark. I'm actually in a well-lit room, and it's just the way it looks here. So I'm going to read this like word for word because it's required. So it's required that you listen while I read. So here we go. Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic. So this public hearing will be conducted virtually using the Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearing, which include the hearings officer, county staff, and the applicant, have both audio and video capability. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator, that's Darcy. Audience members' video will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required by law. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the website as soon as possible. There is a designated time during the hearing when it will be open for testimony. The hearings officer will make it clear when this is, and if you want to provide testimony, you will use the raise hand feature, which Mr. Minch has already found, but it's not time for testimony yet. When the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a bit. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it's time for you to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address when you begin. That's for both for the record and so we can ensure you get a copy of the decision. Once you have provided your testimony, your mic will be muted again and your screen will return to normal. If the record is, well, how about this? The record will be left open at the end of this hearing for additional submittal of testimony. The hearings officer will explain that at the end of the meeting. When submitting testimony, you're going to either email it to me and I'm going to give you my email address and whatnot at the end of the meeting, or you can just snail mail it to the planning department here in Oregon City, and I'll give you that also at the end of the meeting. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer written decision. If you do not testify but would still like to receive a decision, please let me know either by email or just mail me or call me. And again, I'll give you this information at the end of the meeting. I'll just put up a slide. And for now, I'm going to send it back to the hearings officer.
Thank you. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing, which means two important things for those participating in this hearing. First, all of the criteria that can be used in reaching a decision have been identified in the staff report. Testimony, arguments, and evidence must be directed towards the criteria identified in the staff report or other relevant criteria found in the comprehensive plan or other land use regulation that the person believes applies to the decision. Accordingly, please direct your testimony to a relevant approval criterion. Second, failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision maker and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue may preclude appeal to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals on that issue. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designee to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Once final, this decision may be appealed to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. I'll state further for the record, I've not received any ex parte contact in this matter, meaning no one contacted me outside of these proceedings to try to persuade me concerning a fact or a matter which will be at issue today. I have considered issues of bias or conflict of interest and have determined that I do not have any conflict of interest or bias in this matter whatsoever. I will note also that the county is making a record. That record at some point will be available through the county. I will provide a brief outline of the procedure. The process is that I will ask the county to begin the hearing by presenting the information that the county wants me to consider in making a decision in this matter. Then I will provide a similar opportunity to the applicant to also provide information or testimony or evidence that the applicant wants me to consider. That can include witness testimony. I will then provide an opportunity for the members of the general public to make a statement. I may provide opportunity by either the county or the applicant to rebut general testimony by one another or that provided by members of the general public. It sounds like there will be a request to extend the record beyond the hearing today. Is that correct, Mr. Glasgow?
I was just assuming that. How's that? I was probably
okay.
Incorrect in assuming that, but it's typical.
It is. If that becomes necessary, then we'll address it at the time. Why don't you proceed with providing the county's staff report?
Okay, thank you. Just for the record, present today we have county staff, me, Clay Glasgow. We have Darcy Reinhardt as our wonderful moderator. Hearings officer, Mr. Carl Cox. Representing the applicant, we have Bruce Erickson. And Zach Adams, who I'm not familiar with. Zach, how are you? I'm Clay. And we have Johnny Gish from Development Engineering with the county. So it's a small group, and I think we all know why we're here, but in effort to help create a record, and because it's part of my job, I'm going to go through my presentation really quick if everybody's patient. The first thing I'm going to do, again, I'm a little bit flustered because I got started kind of funny, but let me see this slide right here. I'm going to take that as a yes. This is a quick PowerPoint. So file number Z0165. And our application today is to consider, in addition to an existing manufactured dwelling park up in Welch's, property itself, 15 and a half acres or so, located along the west side of East Welch's Road at approximately East Rutledge Road. The existing development is in the southern portion of this 15 and a half acre park, occupying approximately half of it. The remaining property to the north, subject to this proposal, consists of approximately 7.15 acres, wooded and vacant. And I'm going to try one other thing here. Can everybody see a map now? Is everybody following me along here?
No map yet.
No map. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go like this. I'm going to go like this, and then I'm going to go like this. Thanks for that. Okay. So here's the general neck of the woods we're in. We're in Welch's, Oregon. The boundaries are in this pink area. Our subject property is highlighted here. And let me move your heads first, and I'm going to get rid of a couple of these layers just so I can light this up. There it is right there. Okay. All right. So here's our subject property. As you can see, there's a manufactured home dwelling on the southern portion of it. This proposal involves the northern portion up here and adding 26 spaces. The existing park itself, why can't I keep your heads out of my way? The existing manufactured home park was originally constructed back in the mid-60s, according to the applicant, and Bruce is smart, so I believe that, and consists currently of 69 manufactured home spaces and 15 RV spaces. The park is located, as I described and showed you on the map. And again, this is mostly going to be happening in the northern portion of the site. And let me get back to this. I really do feel disjointed today. I'm sorry about it, but you change anything in my regular. Okay, here we go. All right, so here's our site address on Welch's Road. Like I say, it's along the west side of Welch's Road in Welch's at about Rutledge Road. Zone designation for the property is Mountain Recreational Resort, MRR. As far as use in the area, it's rural, residential, and recreational in nature. The applicant goes into some pretty good detail on this. You've got rural, residential, and individual lots adjacent to the north. There's a manufactured home park and rental cabins adjacent, well, across the road to the east. You've got more single-family residential to the south, and then you've got a large undeveloped property adjacent to the west. Here's the map. Okay, can everybody see an aerial now? I just want to make sure I'm not talking to myself completely.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so here's our subject. This is the existing manufactured home park on the same property. The proposal is up here. Now, you're going to have to – I had to rotate this 90 degrees. So north is to the right. So this is the existing southern portion of the property with the manufactured homes that are there now. These are the 26 to be added in the northern portion, including this clump and then this string along the very northern boundary. And you'll notice the applicant highlighted here. There's an intermittent stream crosses the site here east to west and some associated wet spots and you know, potential habitat in there. The applicant mapped this and put proper buffers on it, and they're developing outside of any restricted area. This is a conditional use. That being the case, it's subject to Section 1203, which is kind of the umbrella code section that gets you to all the other development review sections, including the underlying zone, which, like I say, is Mountain Recreational Resort. You've also got a variety of other code sections that apply. There are five criteria that need to be reviewed for conditional use. And each of these five, all of these five need to be met in order for this to be approved. If even one fails, it has to be denied. But if all five are met, then it's approved. First criterion, needs to be shown by the applicant and found by the county that the use actually is a use listed in the zone as a conditional use. Underlying zone here, MRR, Mountain Recreation Resort, table 317.1 identifies allowed uses in the MRR zone and includes manufactured dwelling parks as a potential conditional use. This first criterion is satisfied. Second criterion, the applicant needs to show that the site itself is suitable for the use based on size, shape, you know, other dimensional standards, slope, existence of natural features, just a variety of things. The applicant provided information in response to this criterion. The staff report, which hopefully you've all looked at, also went through all of these, and I was able to find in favor of the second criterion. The site itself is suitable for the proposed use. The third criterion, and I'm glad Johnny's here just in case we have some questions. The proposed development needs to be shown to be consistent with subsection 1000.07 of our zoning code, which deals with the transportation element of our plan and code, including concurrency and safety. You've got to show that the applicant needs to show that the transportation system as it exists or as it is improved through this application is adequate to support the use. And the variety of safety standards are also met. Made findings against that. The third criterion is also met. The fourth one need to show, and this is usually the one that results in the most discussion, the proposed use will not alter the character of the surrounding area in a manner that substantially limits, impairs, or precludes surrounding properties for primary uses allowed in the zoning districts in which surrounding properties are located. Now, notice went out for this, as notice goes out for all conditional use applications. And I did receive comments back. The hearings officer has the comments that had come in by the time the staff report went out. Since then, I received comments from three other individuals, and we'll go over that in a minute. And they all deal with this particular criterion. How's it going to impact the surrounding area? So we're going to come back to that one in a minute. Next criterion needs to be shown that the applicant needs to show that the proposal satisfies applicable goals and policies of the comp plan, which apply to the proposed use. The applicant provided information on this. Staff made findings, particularly in chapters 4, 5, and 7, as discussed in the staff report, and was able to find in favor of all these. The final criterion needs to show that the proposal complies with any overlay zoning districts, as well as the underlying zone itself, Section 317 MRR. In this case, through the conditional use standards, you get to Section 825 of our code, which is that section of code dealing with manufactured home parks. And in this case, it's essentially a series of dimensional requirements, which are all met with this one. But I want to, I kind of blew through that really quick because I want to get to some of these comments. I'd mentioned that we received comments from two individuals prior to the hearing itself, one from Thurman, that's listed as exhibit number 4. Exhibit number 5 is from Minch, and I believe that individual is in the house today and will be providing testimony, so that's good. The hearings officer has seen those comments. Yep. Subsequent to the staff report going out, sorry, I'm having to move around quite a bit here. We've got additional testimony has been received from, let me get this open here. Wow. Okay, so I got testimony from the Thurmans there. There's Bruce. Got testimony from Mary Wright, and I'm just going to read this because it's pretty short. This came in earlier this week. Dear Clay Glasgow, I'm objecting to file Z0165-21-C. I live in Welch's full-time and am a homeowner. We live in a delicate area and are in an area with a high probability of fire. Adding greater living density to this area is dangerous for those of us living here, as well as the vulnerable communities that are drawn to mobile manufactured home parks. In addition, we have one grocery store up here that frequently runs out of food that is sold at a high price, but is expected because it is a resort town. Many people here are on food stamps, even though it is a resort town and we have limited services and quality jobs. Please do not allow this project to go through. Thank you for your time, Mary Wright. Then, one more we got from Paul Wright. I don't know if they're related. Dear Clay Glasgow, the countryside around Mount Hood is beautiful for the most part because nature is still intact. Any development that takes place should blend in or dovetail with the natural surroundings. Adding a mobile home park or trailer park next to another one does nothing but bring added blight into an area that is struggling to maintain its original country appearance. Keep country country. More dense developments such as the one proposed are not what this area's need is not the answer to any problems facing this area. Then, just this morning, actually it's dated yesterday, but I saw it today, got, this is too long to read, but from Judy Decker, also in opposition. Her opposition seems based, at least in part, on serviceability, pointing out that the, neither the water district nor the sewer district may be able to handle the additional load. Although to that, I can testify that both Salmon Valley Water and the sewer purveyor both submitted testimony into this file that they do have adequate capacity to serve the use. But this last one is from Judy Decker, and the hearings officer will receive this and will look at it before making decision. Generally, in this case, what staff's looking at is that drainage across the northern portion of the site. And I'm going to put this back up here real quick just because I'm prepared to talk about that. And I also have Johnny Stater. I want him to talk about some of the conditions regarding frontage improvements on Welch's and what's going to essentially, hopefully someday, be a connector road through the property east-west to access this 20 plus acre piece adjacent to the west, which, you know, at some point in time will develop. But we need to talk about this, the drainage way. We need to talk about this roadway. Otherwise, staff recommending approval because it meets all the approval criteria that we have to compare this to. And with that, I'm done babbling, but I'm here for questions.
I'd like to provide an opportunity for the applicant to make a statement for the record as well, to address perhaps some of the public comments that were received.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The two comments that I did receive by email, the first one was from the Thurmans, who are the owners of lot 200, that 2-acre tract that's surrounded by the north portion of our project. Mm-hmm. And their main concern is fencing is one. Rather than have cedar fencing, they would like to see chain link fencing with slats. I've checked that with the owner. I see no problem. And doing that.
Okay, so was there a specific description of that in the application, or was that?
Not really. We showed an existing cedar fence by symbol.
I saw it just as a sample, as an example.
Right, right.
Right.
But they requested, because of the fire danger, the life expectancy would be less for cedar than for chain link. And we concur with that. In fact, the chain link is actually more economical and longer lasting and easier to maintain.
Okay.
We had to do with granting access to Street E. And that's going to be a subject of our discussion when we get to the access point on Welch's Road. And they are requesting an easement that would take their runoff from their site once they develop it to the drainage course that goes through this property.
Mr. Erickson, just for clarification purpose, this is Exhibit 4. This is a testimony from the Thurmans. They're long-time landowners up there. And yeah, I think we're talking about number 2. And number 2 specifically references something called Mountain Shadow LLC, which is incorrect.
That's incorrect. Yeah, it should be Hood.
Right.
Hood Forest LLC.
Yeah, that happens to have been an RV park that we recently looked at in Wilton. Right. Also, it just got mixed up in there by the Thurman. So, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I see no problem with granting that easement for stormwater to the receiving part. That's being a resource area anyway at that point. The other comment we received was from Dan Minch. Is that correct?
It's Minch. Yep.
Mintz.
Yep.
And he commented basically on, he has comments with regards to Street E. He wonders why it's 25 feet instead of 30 feet. And actually, we showed on our plans as 24 feet. The ingress egress is very important to us, as right now there is room for only one car. Well, I have to state on that the owner granted them a 50-foot easement that extends where Street E is shown there, so that he could provide a driveway to his residence on Tax Lot 1000. That person owns Tax Lot 1000 and 900, which consists of about 20 acres.
And just for the record, that's the property adjacent behind to the west.
And that's property to the west.
Okay.
Then they want to know if we plan to pave Street E. Our plans, proposed plans, do show a paved street on Street E. He also commented on the cedar versus chain link. I see no problem there either. And he appreciated the location of the fire hydrants that we're placing up above to the new development.
I saw that as well. You said you're paving Street E. I thought you were paving half of it.
We're paving 24-foot wide pavement on Street E. Our proposed plan shows two 12-foot lanes. Now, the reason we did some of that is that's still park property. Street E is just part of that northerly part, and there were the lot lines on the northerly part of the existing. Maybe I can show it here better. Let's see that somewhat, maybe. It's probably pretty hard. Anyway, the existing lots that are the that are adjacent to Street E, the existing ones,
okay,
extend into that 50-foot easement that was granted by probably with outbuildings that are probably about 6 to 7 feet. So the center line of our street E, as proposed, is not the center line of the 50-foot right-of-way.
Okay.
It's slightly shifted over.
But let me see if I can get that in a way we can look at it together, all right?
Yeah. It should be on the...
Okay, can we all see this now? I'm looking at... This is the street we're talking about?
No, Street E is down. Go down... Raise it up. There you go. That's 3D.
Okay.
And these lot lines here, the 50-foot goes from here over to this dashed line.
Okay.
And you can see some of that dashed line when it gets up here protrudes into the existing manufactured home part.
Yeah.
The actual 50-foot was defined by the right-of-way on tax lot 200. There's subtly right-of-way line that was extended up to the west, and then went 50 feet over.
Okay.
So the plans do show that as a 24-foot paved road.
Okay, 24-foot wide paved road.
And that's probably the biggest, well, those are the comments, or my reaction to the comment.
Well, And Bruce, you didn't. I didn't have time. I just didn't get around to sending you the new comments that came in, which right. I read. Yeah, so it's not fair that you don't really have a chance to look at them and respond to them.
Well, the first one, it sounded like it was almost discriminatory.
Let's talk about
just the, from the point of
the
know,
comment
people that may live there may not have the well-to-do that.
That doesn't mean anything to me, honestly. But what does the comment also included parking along that road? Will there be anything to address?
No parking.
No parking. Will it be posted for no parking?
Yeah, we can post it. There wouldn't even be wide enough for parking unless they parked into tax lot 200.
But yeah, that,
there'd be a stop sign there and park, private drive.
Yeah, private drive, no parking along it.
No parking, right.
Mr. Cox?
Yes.
In conversations that Mr. Erickson and I had before, Street E will not connect with Welch's Road.
It will and not?
It will not. Street E, that's conditioned not to connect. If anything, there was going to be a fire access. That was a conversation Mr. Erickson and I had, and I believe that's conditioned,
right.
As I submitted to Mr. Glasgow.
Yeah, I think there was, when we discussed that previous to this meeting, there was a misunderstanding there of what was going to be allowed on Welch's Road and not. And when it came back, Street B, and the conditions as they now are, Street B and Street E are eliminated. Only Street H.
Street A and Street H will connect. Street H is to connect with center line across Welch's Road with another access. But Street E and Street B connection, because right now Street B does connect. Those two streets are to be eliminated.
Hey, Johnny, where are we at? Is this Street A right here?
Correct.
That's Street A, right? That's the main entrance and up to the office here.
That's the road entrance to the park. And then if you go north a little bit, Clay, the easterly street that goes north and south. No, to your west. Right there. Yeah, go up. Up more. Yeah, so
that's north.
Yeah, so if you go up north, the easterly street that goes north and south, Mr. Erickson was proposing to actually get a permit to cross the stream and connect with Street H.
Which is up here.
Correct. So there was going to be an interconnection in between there and conversations with Mr. Erickson and I previously. And that's right. That, and that's, I mean, as you well know, I'm not able to really condition anything on site because of the park permit and the way that the ORS reads. But, you know, we do have jurisdiction over Welch's. So they were, he was proposing that they were going to get a permit to cross the stream and connect Street H with, what is it, Street F. Is that right, Mr. Erickson?
It's the Street F, yeah, over here.
Yeah. That would so be Street F was going to connect.
That could occur. That is not shown in the proposal. What we have is we connected here. We may not even need Street H connection to Welch's Road.
I think it would. I'm not opposed to Street H because it's not creating any more access points because there's an access point directly on the east side right there. If you don't want to connect to Welch's Road, that's fine. But I think the fire department, I think having an access, you know, emergency access up to the fire department, I don't think they're going to oppose that at all. So you can leave Street H as a connection, as access, or it could be restricted access for fire access only. I'm really open to that.
Okay, and this is Street
H. The whole point of access is that Welch's Road is a minor arterial.
Yes.
Under the code, that requires 400 feet distance between intersecting streets.
Correct, but there's access on the east side.
But that's going to be, that doesn't appear anywhere on Welch's Road. And I contend that East Welch's Road was just arbitrarily, for some reason, not to my reasoning, was declared a minor arterial. Now, probably because it connects to the highway out here at 26. But where is the collectors that would feed the minor arterial? They're really local streets. So in fact, I think just from existing as well as the engineering standpoint, and I'm not trying to argue against transportation, but it forces a condition on Welch's Road that shouldn't be placed there only because it was classed as a minor arterial. You can see all these connections here going to the road all the way through, and they're not, there's a mobile home park over here with access, there's cabin rental access here, there's another access here, the mobile home park, then this Rutledge Road just connects to the mobile home park. You go down here a little bit further, you got another road just right in here, going into four houses here, and then you got Fairway Avenue right down here. I don't know how you can maintain that standard without, I mean, I don't even want to argue that point. It's just that we need the access here. You can see we can't provide a secondary access for this one if that doesn't exist. Right now, there's an existing driveway that serves Mr. Manch, comes out here in the access. It's a 10, 12-foot gravel road that he put in himself. I assume by permit, once the easement was granted, it's already there. And all we were doing was taking that existing gravel road. Instead of coming out with Street B, we were eliminating that. Sure, it lines up a little better with Rutledge. But we were taking that out and connecting it back to the main entrance here. So we're just looping that road. We got this road centered to feed these others. That's all. Just seemed like a logical layout.
Could one of you, either you or Johnny, explain what the resolution is going to be, where are we at with all these roads?
Well, I was under the impression that when I talked to Mr. Erickson, that we already came to a conclusion on this. There wasn't a submittal that was
a proposal. Was as shown in that.
But Johnny, what's your understanding?
Understanding was, and this is what was conditioned, was that Street A and Street H would be the only connections. Street E is in Edward, and Street B is in Boy, would both be eliminated. That was the conversation that Mr. Erickson and I had on the phone. Now, I understand that Street E does have an existing connection with Welch's Road. However, it is on the subject lot and it's going through land use. Therefore, it's subject to the roadway standards, section 220 access management. The classification of Welch's Road is a minor arterial. I don't have any control over the classifications of the road. I just, you know, make sure that
I concur. I would just throw that in.
So, if the classification needs to be changed, you know, Mr. Erickson can consult with the comprehensive plan, and that can be done at a later time. But right now, that's the classification that we're dealing with here.
Yes, sir.
But in the conversations that Mr. Erickson and I had was that, you know, he has right here, Street B is to be eliminated and Street E was going to be eliminated. Now, I did talk with him about possibly making Street E a fire access and gated. He said that he didn't really believe that was, you know, really necessary. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Erickson, but and thought that didn't really need, you know, wasn't really warranted due to the fire access there, because he was going to be connecting Street F with Street H to the north. So that's the way it's conditioned, at least the submitted condition. I haven't, unfortunately, I haven't had time to really look at the final decision. I don't know if it's been, you know, well, it hasn't been final, but. The condition that I have, that I submitted, was the removal of Street B and Street E, and then only H and A would have connection
to Welch's. Connects internally.
Correct. Well, yes, and H connects internally to F. Correct. But Street H would have connection to Welch's Road, because of the access directly across, and it's conditioned, as I wrote it, to align with the road, with Cedar Glen Estates, the northern access to Cedar Glen Estates.
Well, the only thing, I know we discussed that, and all these things came out. Our discussion had no bearing on what we had proposed in the hearing thereof and the response back. Now, the response back that you had saying that we agreed to this, you know, we talked about it. I don't think we agreed to anything. The problem we got here is we have over here to the west of this property, 15 acres undeveloped.
Mm-hmm. And then and your condition Mr. also...
Which, huh?
You're also conditioned here to extend an access easement over that direction to I think it's tax lot 1100 and tax lot 100, I believe.
100 is the undeveloped portion. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So you're conditioned to, and I'm trying to find it here. I mean, even condition C6C, the applicant shall remove the two more northern existing driveways, B and E, and reestablish the swale. And then condition D7A, the applicant shall provide access to East Welch's Road at Street H, meeting standard detail 500.
To them.
Hey, Johnny, just FYI, when I cut and pasted your conditions into the staff report, they got put into a different numbering system. But they're in the same order and they're there.
Okay.
Well, I saw those, and the problem I had here was to grant this easement again, made reference to it. But what's the last statement under that thing? It says, in any development thereof, mm-hmm. which in essence you're forcing to public street or
nope.
could.
No. We're not forcing a public. I have no jurisdiction over a public street through there because of the ORS code of it being a mobile home and RV park. It says easement, not a public easement. There's no right of way being required through there. I'm not requiring any right of way dedication.
Well, I know that was what we discussed because my logic to start with when I first looked at this is that should probably be a public street.
If you'd like to propose a public street, that's completely different than what you're even proposing here. I don't ever
let me go back a little bit.
County right of way.
I've been engineering things here for 50 years. I don't know how long you've been working there, but I lived up here for 25 years. There was a development proposed for this property. And it's not, all, and there was a public street shown here, and there was one up here, and where this sewer is located that WA's put in was in a street that was proposed and connected. Okay, all the changes on Welch's with regards to a minor arterial, et cetera.
But I was not aware of any public county
Mr.
road.
Mr. Erickson, just a moment here. Let me get some clarification here. Mr. Erickson, if you're talking about a proposed public roadway that was never actually, you know, dedicated or built, you're just talking about what could have happened. I mean, maybe it makes more sense. You certainly sound more familiar with this than I am. But if that's not what's actually there, then that's not what we're looking at today. Mr. Gish, what was your comment about this?
And specifically what, Mr. Cox, I'm sorry?
What's your comment in response? I wanted to make sure that I didn't interrupt you both.
In regards to the access or
about the public
accesses road. Or the easements?
The proposed public road he's talking about and why that should or shouldn't be a public street. You were answering it and I didn't get to catch the rest of your answer.
I was not aware of any proposal of a public street now or ever before. I'm not opposed to right of way, to the extension to have a right of way and new public easement through the site to extend. I think that could be completely warranted, but as I was never aware of that, this is the first time we've ever heard of a right-of-way creation through here. So my condition here that I proposed that I submitted was a 25-foot wide access and utility easement through tax lot 100 benefiting 1,900. So that way any development to the west would have access to Welch's Road. If the applicant would like to resubmit something with a right-of-way dedication through the site to the tax lot to the west, I'd be completely open to that. We can address that. Minimum right-of-way widths, I believe, are 44 feet. Without looking at the roadway standards real quickly, I think it's 44 feet. So that's nowhere on this application that I can see. If the applicant would like to propose that, I'd be more than willing to entertain that idea.
Mr. Erickson, is that what you're proposing?
When we first started this project, I did have a correspondence with Department of Transportation asking if that street should be public. Just simply because there was a driveway in there accessing two parcels over here, one of which there's 20 acres almost that's undeveloped. If someone wanted to develop that, where are they going to have their access? Now you talk about one up here. Well, you know, this is a private property. It's park. We don't want public cars traveling through a mobile home park. So we thought that's why we end up with this street E, which would provide the distance needed. It would provide, still maintain that one access to that tax lot 1,000 over here, Mr. Minch's residence.
Mr. Erickson, I'm looking at the diagram here, and I mean, I can't read the small print, but it sure doesn't look like it's 44 feet wide at that narrow spot to the, well, I guess to the left of the picture. I'm looking at a mobile home park designated, I mean, a mobile home actually shaded out. Yeah.
Now, this dash line, between these two dash lines is a 50-foot easement.
Oh.
And you can see right through these manufactured homes up in this area, there's that dash line goes through them.
Right.
Now here's what happened. The owner of this park, when he granted Mr. Mensch the easement, he extended the line on tax lot 200, the southerly boundary of that, up through there, and that constituted the northern right-of-way line. And then he went back 50 feet, assuming he had enough clearance with the others. And that comes out like it's almost 50 down here is all right. When you get up here, then you only got, you know, 10 feet of it's eaten away by the spaces not being laid out to map that 50 foot.
It looks like, I don't think that that's something that we can resolve here. I mean,
if there was a dedication of right of way there, those two.
We don't want to dedicate it right away. We asked that at one time and the county said, no way, because they don't want more roads to maintain.
Well, we can make a public road, a county right of way.
Why can't you make the same thing with the other? I mean, seems to me you're manipulating. If they made this a public right-of-way at some time because
Mr.
of
Erickson, you're saying
here, that axe would be there, right? Yet we can't do it now there without a fire-only access. I mean, I don't understand that.
Mr. Erickson, that's not what I heard or understood. I heard that Mr. Gish say that you could do that, but I did not hear a requirement.
Requirement for what? For public
for fire road access, right?
Oh no, we don't really want a public road. We just asked for it initially, whether that would be considered. Right now, part of the park, and it's a private street.
Mr. Erickson, are you asking for something different than what is shown in your proposal and is reflected?
No, we're exactly what's shown here. We're not asking for is the comment in the transportation part of the staff report that eliminates B and E.
I thought you had agreed to eliminate B and E because you had.
No, we did not agree to that. We discussed that into the hearing. Why are we agreeing to things before even the hearing?
Mr. Gish, do you have a response to Mr. Erickson's comment that he does not, that the applicant had not agreed to the closing of those access points?
There was a phone conversation between Mr. Erickson and I that when I reached out to him about the accessing, about the multiple accesses and how they don't meet the spacing standards. There was a phone conversation between him and I. It lasted probably well over 20 minutes. We talked multiple times about the different accesses. We talked about the fire access and everything. It was my understanding, and when we ended the phone conversation, that we were both in agreement that Street B, which he's proposing here to be removed and closed, and Street E would both be removed, and Street A and Street H would be the only accesses being allowed, with Street F connecting to Street H. That was the understanding of the phone conversation that I had with Mr. Erickson. There was nothing in writing. He did have a proposal from the pre-application meeting that did connect Street F and Street H, which we have right here. It's in, there's a connection there. with a hammerhead. And we talked about that. He said that that's what they were proposing. And I said, well, can you send me something? And he said, well, I submitted in my pre-application notes. And I looked at the pre-application notes. I go, yeah, actually it did. So I guess that's good. But it was, that was the conversation that we had, that street B and E would be eliminated.
Okay. And the county's position.
I wrote, sorry to interrupt, but that's why I wrote the conditions as they are.
Sure. And you relied on that conversation. I get it. And the reason that the county is interested in having E closed is because of the, it's within 400 feet of the other access.
Correct.
Well, it's unfortunate we didn't have an agreement. As he said, we did discuss accesses here. The pre-app showed this road as well as the connection across here. I won't dispute that. There's a drawing in the pre-app that shows that. We have now the existing park. There's an access. A accesses Welch's Road. B accesses Welch's Road. And the driveway coming from Mr. Minch's property accesses the road, Welch's Road. That's three access points right now. We're trying to maintain the three access points. A, E, and H.
And H, I understand. Okay.
Keep getting squeezed because of the 400 criteria, I guess, for a minor arterial.
All right. Does the applicant have something further to add?
Well, other than the point that I don't know how Mr. Minch is going to get out of his house if Road E is eliminated. Or are we still allowing an easement with the driveway there?
You have Street E that goes north and south that connects down to Street A. Street E goes north and south all the way to the west side. So Mr. Minch would just come down there the way right now, and then go south on Street E and then east on Street A.
Well, that's a little bit different of asking manufactured park to allow public access through the park street. I'm not sure for safety that's very good.
I believe that they're driving right through the park if Street E connects also, because there's all these lots up on Street F and Street G that connect also.
That's true, and I see your point, and it's still an easement, and it still allowed to access to the arterial road, minor arterial road.
I tried to lay out at one point. I don't know if you can see this thing here.
I can't.
It doesn't come out very well, probably. The camera. Anyway, I tried to.
I'd like to state again, Mr. Cox, engineering is open to a public right-of-way if Street E would connect. However, I think it would be in the best interest to remove Street A connection if Street E is to have right of way. And then that would be county right of way, but publicly maintained. We do create that throughout the county, especially in the rural areas and urban areas also, where the county does not maintain these roads. They're publicly maintained, but county right of way, and that would extend possibly here through the tax lot from Welch's Road through the subject lot. I'd be happy to talk with the applicant about that. If they're willing to do that, there would be additional requirements with right-of-way dedication and pavement. And so improvements, full street improvements through there. If they'd like to entertain that they want to continue the record to be open, I'd be happy to talk with them about that. That would alleviate a lot of these issues and connectivity also. So I'll.
I appreciate that, but I think, you know, I can't speak directly. I'd have to go back to the owner with mm-hmm. what.
There would be a cross.
We have the comments. Go ahead.
C100, standard detail C100 would provide those for a local street. And so if you'd like to talk to your client about that, that's fine. I'd be more than happy to talk with them or you or anybody else about that in further discussion. But that's what has not been what's proposed so far.
I see that. And so, Mr. Erickson, I understand your statement that you do not have, you don't feel like you have authority to commit your client to closing access, Road A's access. That's the issue. But I can certainly, think we can all agree that there is a certain advantage to Mr. Gish's statement of creating what's currently Road Street E as a public right-of-way. That what I'm going to suggest is that we do, as Mr. Glasgow originally said, keep the record open so that you can discuss that with your client, and if you can come to an agreement, then work that out with Mr. Gish and the county and a new set of conditions of approval forwarded to my office for review as a additional submittal after the hearing. Is that what we're talking about here?
I have no problem doing that with them. The only concern I have is we have a contiguous park here now with a public street in the middle of it. So we're mixing park traffic with public traffic.
If and it's I'm a not, public road, you're right. It'll be open to the public.
It's going
to
be more safety issues than that one access point. Also, I just want to highlight again the point of tax lot 200, the comment that was received from the Thurmans. They were asking for access to Street E as well as a secondary access to the one they have on Welch's. So there's another, that isn't developed. There's going to be another access to Welch's at that location. I know the road says no. I don't know if you can, I mean, I just don't know how it's all going to fit together. If you set a criteria for freeway in an area that has to, very hard.
It is. Is there a different issue, or is that the one condition of approval that you are really the issue within the conditions of approval?
Yes, that was the only thing we had.
That's right. And yep. Mr. Gish, did you have something further to add, or are you ready to move on?
No, I'm ready to move on. If the applicant wants to leave it open and talk about, that's fine. That was my understanding, so that's what I conditioned, and I'm open to suggestion on this.
I didn't know that
there was going to be a continuation or you know issues on this.
It wasn't apparent to me either. I will leave the record open 7 days for that additional supplement. 7 days period. Also within that 7 days, if there is a member of the general public that wants to submit a comment particularly relevant to this, and they're welcome to as well. An additional 7 days for the county to respond to those materials, and 7 days for the applicant to have a last word. Is that clear? If you need additional time, just ask, okay? And submit your...
Yeah, because even this hearing, we didn't get the... till Monday before I got the conditions and the findings.
Okay. If you don't come to an agreement, I will review the proposal. I'll review what the county's response is, and I'll make a decision about it. Okay. I'd like to provide an opportunity at this time for members of the general public who are present today to make a comment for my consideration.
Hey, this would be the time. There you go. Use the raise hand feature, please. Thank you. Darcy, are you keeping an eye on this? Mr. Minch has his hand up.
Sorry. I'm sorry, trying to get to my unmute.
Okay. This is other Dan. We have two Dans.
We have Dan Minch and then Dan with no last name showing, who has his hand up.
Okay. I show Dan, not Dan Minch.
Right.
There. I show speaker active.
Okay. Go.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Hi. Sorry about that. I was having trouble on the other computer. That's why I came in on a second computer.
Oh, is this Mr. Minch?
Yes, this is Mr. Okay. Minch.
Okay.
Actually, that's my dad, but I'll go by it now. You've addressed most of my concerns. You threw me for a loop with this driveway thing. I have a problem with losing my access if you're talking about closing road E off, but if you're looking at extending it, you know, to a thoroughfare or a county, I'm open to that. My big problem would be parking again. As it is now, Hood Course Acres is overflowing on parking. The proposal shows only 5 parking spots in Hood Course Acres other than the ones allotted to the homes there. And they have 12 cars parked in the back, half of them over the property line. I'm wondering where these cars are going to go if they put these access points in that they're drawing up. There are no additional spots on the new proposed Hood Course Acres at all. According to the manager of the existing Hood Course Acres, he told me 2 weeks ago that he figures there are about 2.5 cars per spot over there now on their property, and there's no parking. Where are the new parking people going to park if they're not going to throw it out on this thoroughfare or this road E? That needs to be addressed up front because they show no additional parking on the new development at all. Not for guests, not for anybody. And so they're going to end up parking on that road E. And that's not really a good subsidy. That road should be, you know, posted as a fire lane, no parking period, in order to keep the egress, especially if you're going to have that many people coming onto that. With the Thurmans in the future using it, hopefully, you know, someday maybe we'll develop. I don't know in my lifetime if that'll happen, but, you know, that is a proposal. But the idea of that is nice. I don't have a problem with that, but you have to worry about these parking problems. And that was one of our big issues is the road issues. Right now, the Hood Course Acres right now, as far as water and storm drain, empties out onto the new proposed Hood Course Acres. It just drains and filters down through the soil. So when you're looking at your water management, you need to take that into consideration that also has to be managed somehow and not just dumped into that creek, which is going to go down and overflow not only my property, but the golf course and anything else if it's not taken care of for water retention. So it's not just a new proposal for water retention, it's the existing one. Because their water retention is dumping it on that new Hood Course Acres property proposal. So you need to take that into consideration when looking at water retention. Stream removal was a problem. If the way it's drawn up on this map, they show no place to put snow on that road E when it needs to be plowed. If you're going to make it up 44 foot, you're going to have room in the sides to put snow. So that issue is pretty much mute then. Pedestrian walkways, there's no way out from the new proposal to the highway other than walking down that road E. So I'm hoping if they're going to put that in, it'll be sidewalks on one side or the other. So there will be some place for pedestrians to walk. So they're not going to be walking out in the middle of the road like, you know, Welch's Road is now pretty much. I know they've talked about something on Welch's Road, but I haven't heard anything about that, especially when the new Hood Course Acres on Road E has to come in and out of Road E on that one spot pretty much. The proposal on the other side of the creek isn't quite the issue. And if they're going to link those together, maybe that would satisfy it. I don't know. But these are all things that haven't really been addressed in my mind. And I'm hoping that the county is going to look at all this. I mean, without living up here, you don't see that. And I've been up here on this property for almost 15 years. I've lived on the mountain over 30. And I know, you know, snow is a big problem. Ice is a problem. Pedestrians. And there's a lot of people that walk here. The site study they did on traffic was a farce. I mean, you have two cars at each of those in entering and exiting that property once or twice a day. And they did not take that. I mean, didn't show that on the traffic survey. So whoever did their survey didn't do a very good job. I mean, they got to get in and out of there somehow. And Welch's Road was the only place to go. So all that needs to be looked at. I know that, you know, the county and stuff looks at that, but you're taking a third party's issue. And I don't think they did a very good job at that study. I think that pretty much sums it up. I hate to lose that access. I don't know how you can take my road away if you're going to go with a different proposal and close Road E. You're going to make me drive through the middle of the trailer court? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't, I mean, who would build a house behind a trailer court and drive through it? Especially if you go up there and drive that trailer court, it is not very sightable. I mean, it's not, you know, they're dumping all their stuff out back and stuff. And that stuff that needs, I mean, the Thurmans addressed that with the fencing. It needs to be addressed with the fencing all the way to the end of the issue, not just down past the Thurman's property. It should go all the way on both sides. I'd love to see the fence go across the old Hoodcourse Acres, especially if they're going to put a road back there, because they're going to end up parking on my property then, because there is no parking. And if there's no fence there to, you know, bury it off, you know, they're just going to park. And I don't know what my rights are, but something needs to be done. I mean, it needs to be addressed before you have these issues, in my opinion. You know, I don't mean to. I'm sorry.
I understand your concerns about that, and also about the closure of E. It doesn't sound like I need to make a decision about that today, as there'll be that issue will be revisited by, through further discussions by the applicant and the county. I did receive photographs of the area showing, you know, the cars along that, showing that fenced area. And I see also your concerns. I can see on the map where you're talking about people parking along your property there as sort of using it as a overflow parking area. It's a common, in my experience, that's a common problem with properties that aren't being developed. They're, you know, people will park on them. And you have rights as a private landowner to do address it as you see fit.
The one other thing that did come up in the talk here was the easement, the 50-foot easement. Just so you know, a couple of those things were put on the property after I got my easement, and managers just basically let them do it, even though they knew they did it. That was a management problem. That was not something that was existing. Yeah. And so if you're looking at this, I mean, that's, I mean, even the one trailer park is sold three times, and the owners know that they're over the easement, and that the managers even allowed them to put sheds behind being over the top of that afterwards, although they did move that just recently.
Those issues are a nuisance and an annoyance, and they are things that neighbors have as problems. It's not something that I'll directly consider, you know, as relevant to the conditional use permit application. It's a neighbor dispute that happens. Things that change the character of the neighborhood, things that significantly or substantially impair your use of your property as a permanent part of this conditional use permit. If I were to consider, if you had some information about that, I would certainly consider it. But things that are sort of an annoyance, for example, people parking where they shouldn't, where they're not allowed, those aren't, that's not part of what I'm here to decide today. Is that?
I think I'm more bringing it up for the future rather than the past.
Okay.
Because, you know, it can be headed off by, you know, by the issues of putting some fencing up so they can't put no park.
Okay.
And so I'm sure the county's taking. The reason I brought up the issue of them building over the top of the easement was because it was brought up when he was talking about putting the roadway in and why they wouldn't expand it. The reason is it's because they allowed it to happen. Not because it happened before the easement was issued. They allowed it afterwards. For them to come back and say, well, we can't do it, it's because they screwed up in the first place.
Oh, okay. Does either the
county... I mean, I'm not... I mean, no, you can't do much...
Yeah. Do either the county or the applicant want to address any of the comments or make a rebuttal about them?
Well, can I ask a question? I think Mr. Erickson will be the one to answer this, but Mr. Minch brought up several items, at least some of which will be addressed by the hearings officer in decision later. But with regards to parking, that's a specific dimensional standard, and it's required that each space have two off-street parking spots. Could you respond to that? I'm going to put the site plan back up, just because I'm kind of curious, if nothing else. Okay, so Mr. Erickson, I mean, are we showing parking spaces for each of these manufactured homes?
Those are driveways that are 10 feet by 40 feet. Okay. Actually, 2 feet, I think, in length. Two cars for each space. And over here, they're 20 by 20.
Yeah, so you've got stacked parking here and then side-by-side parking here.
Right.
Okay.
Now, it isn't, you know, we will probably put in some, you know, showing, I had at one time some additional parking spaces, but two is all required. I didn't want to put too much in. And if you hold that map up, the area that he's discussing where parking, I think, occurs, probably down in this, where you can't see, but on Street E off of Thurman's property, tax lot 200.
This is Thurman.
It's kind of a wide area there where I had access when that was logged off, I think, at one time, and there's gravel in there.
Yeah.
And that's probably where a lot of those people park.
The only thing I would add in regards to parking along Street E, if it was
over here, Dan.
Dedicated to the public, would just be a pavement requirement. 22 feet is a minimum requirement. If there is proposed parking along Street E, it would just be a wider pavement. And that is a proposal thing, would not be a required thing. So the applicant could propose wider paving that would allow parking along Street E if it was dedicated to the public. It would not be a requirement.
And also I just add that our proposed plans show a 6-foot paved pedestrian pathway along the property frontage of the expansion. Mm-hmm. It would not occur through tax lot 200. It would be placed in the 8-foot PUE.
Okay, I see that.
So that is addressed on the proposal.
And that's,
I'll also add too that next year, or 2022, Welch's Road is supposed to go into a design phase from the highway to Verde Lane, I think it is, looking at pedestrian and bicycle travel improvements too. And those improvements would be, I guess, under the 5-year plan, 2025. Is that right, Jonathan?
That
varies a little bit because it's probably a big. So we tried to tie in the same as the apartment complex that went in. Over on the east side, there's the Cedars place there. They have a pedestrian path. Anyway, that is addressed on the East Walters Road improvement plan sheet.
Are there any additional comments from the public today? Anyone that did not have an opportunity? I think Mr. Minch is the only person that came. Is that correct?
No, there are several others.
Oh, okay.
Anybody else wants to talk? Now's your time to put up your little raise hand thing, so Darcy can see you.
I have Elaine and Steve Hilliker. And if you could please provide your mailing address, that would be great.
How do you spell Hilliker?
H-I-L-L-I-K-E-R.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I need to unmute. This is Steve Hilliker. I'm current manager of Hood Course Acres, the existing park here. And I've just been manager for 3.5 years. And we've tried to deal with the parking in here. and Minch and I have indeed talked about the parking that's behind the RV area in the existing park. We used his gate as the property line and took that across for where we felt that we could do things. And then later the surveying was done back there, and his gate is about 8 feet further back onto his property. So what we had was indeed a little too far onto his property. And we've been working to get the parking blocks and everything else to get the vehicles that are kind of edging back onto his area so they don't go back there. we are also dealing with the place here where the people, some of them have 6 and 7 vehicles. Some of those are not operative and they're not supposed to be in the park. And we've been handing out the violations, and we're about ready to tow a bunch of those, which will alleviate some of our parking. Yep. So this is in that nuisance area and so on. I just kind of wanted to make it clear that we are working on this stuff.
Thank you for that. And I do appreciate that you're addressing the neighbor complaints, that you're working to be a good neighbor to the adjacent property owner. I'm going to, this is an opportunity to provide input concerning the application for the conditional use permit. And I, to the extent that what you're talking about is relevant to the character of the area, or how you are making efforts to not substantially impair the neighbor's use of their property, I understand that, but these are temporary things that aren't.
Yes, that is temporary. The thing that is permanent is the road across the back of the area right now where we have the playground area back there. It certainly impacts the plans that were made in here for that playground area to be expanded back to the property line. We've done the work of clearing trees and everything else back there. That cuts that playground area in half and requires then that we have to put up a fence next to the playground area between the road and that, so it's additional expense. I have a shop that's at the corner of A Street and the one in the back. And that would then have to be moved to somewhere else. We have a fire pit. We have play set equipment in the corner. They show the office right behind that is picnic. And then the playground area, that playground is gonna move or extend into that whole area, because we do have 68 mobile homes in here and we've got 14 RVs in here, and you need a place for the kids because this is a family park. I guess that covers it at this point. I do agree with Minch that I don't think it would be nice for him to have to drive through our park to get in and out of his place either. So that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Just a moment. Let me make a note.
Close A and put B and E together.
Okay. Is there someone in addition that has a public comment?
Yes. Darcy, you got them? We got Pete and Deb next.
Hello.
I have Pete and Deb. And again, I'm going to ask you to please provide your mailing address.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Hi. So, yes.
Pete and Deborah.
Yeah, it's just Deborah Himes here right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm a neighbor living off of Twinberry Loop, the south side of Twinberry Loop.
Okay.
So it sounds like this proposal will put 8 manufactured homes pretty much directly right behind my house, between my my backyard and the stream that is currently back there. And I noticed there was a comment about the creek being an intermittent creek. Actually, as a homeowner, I've been here for almost 4 years now, and that creek pretty much is flowing constantly. And it is also flowing into ponds in the golf course and continues down to the Salmon River. So I'm concerned about, first of all, environmental impacts with that stream. Has there been an environmental impact study that we know of?
Well, the answer to that is no. I think the other question is, would one be required? The answer to that is also no.
And why is that?
Based on the fact that it's not identified as rising to the level of requiring that.
Because it's too small?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's a concern of mine for sure. And then coming back to the water retention issue that Mr. Thurman had, I think that's very appropriate as well, because in the winter, it does rise pretty high. And if that retention is going to be decreased by development and pavement, there's going to be more water in that creek. So are they actually planning on putting a culvert under that, making the creek go through a culvert? Is that what's happening there, where the road is going to go across?
I put this up on the screen. Hopefully everybody can see it. I'm assuming this is where you are somewhere.
I'm on lot 6. So I'm about, let's see. Yeah. Okay. Almost to the end of your thing.
Okay.
There.
Okay. And then I think the applicant can better address that drainage issue, Mr. Erickson, that question she's got on that.
Yeah, there is what we call intermittent stream or drainage course. You'll notice all the properties to the east with the culverts all discharge to that, and it travels all the way through in the other properties and also serves the ponds on the fairway at the golf course.
Correct.
I was just out there this morning. All of these culverts that are feeding there are dry. The ditches along Welch's Road are dry. And that's why we come up with the intermittent stream. And in the summertime, it pretty much dries up. The snow melt, rain, heavy rains that feed that, and all the culverts and properties to the east feed that area. I talked with the golf course superintendent. They actually use irrigation pumps to augment the flow in their ponds to keep their ponds full.
Right. Right. And so there's a new.
We do have a buffer, at least a 50-foot buffer all along that stream on both sides.
A 50-foot buffer?
Pardon?
There's a 50-foot buffer, you say?
Right. It's an open space.
Oh, between the stream and, yeah,
the show me? And then between your property and the manufactured homes, we have a 15-foot setback just to their space line, which will be fenced between your south lot line.
Okay.
And the property would go all along there.
Okay.
I don't know if I can see
landscaped on the inside of the park.
This drainage feature is not identified by the county as anything of note, but the applicant knows it's there. And as Bruce mentioned, there's a 50-foot buffer on either side of the creek, the intermittent stream, whatever you want to call it, that is to be left alone through this development.
You know, it'll be left wooded and everything else, unless we have to put one road across it. That's right. Still an option. I guess they'll have to discuss with the road department.
So will that be a bridge then? Is that what you're saying?
No, it'll probably be three culverts.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. How are you going to drain that water if it's not a bridge?
Well, we don't drain the water. Well, the culverts that cross Welch's Road, there's three of them that feed that plus the road. So we figured three 24-inch culverts just to be under the road to convey the existing water that's going through there.
Uh-huh.
For the new development, we put in detention pipes under our stormwater plan that retains the flow to that which would normally occur if development hadn't occurred.
Okay.
And then we release it during the dry under that rate.
Okay.
We've got to consider some, because we've got now over 1,000 feet of 48-inch pipe to bury.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then getting back to the my southern property line, you're saying going to be a 15-foot setback?
Yeah, setback to the space line.
There's
a 15-foot setback on all the property lines through the project. And then probably we show a proposed fence of probably about 2 feet off your southern property line towards this property that'll isolate that. So the main thing what it'll probably do is it's going to prevent access from your lot to the creek.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to prevent. Yeah, we have a trail back there for the Twinberry Loop people on the south side here. That's our access to the golf course is back there. And it's a public trail that we use. And I know it's not necessarily our property at this point. It's just a green space, we were told, when we purchased this house. So that's our access. So I'm trying to figure out how that's going to be impacted as well. Yeah.
Yeah, well, probably most of here in lot 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's pretty much the end. Your lot's pretty much the end of where the manufactured home. So the rest of the property to the west, and that trail that's along there, and it goes through a tax lot 900 and then 1,000 over by Menchus till it gets to the pond, will still be there.
Okay, so that'll still be there. Okay, good. Good. And do you know if these houses are going to be, or these manufactured homes are going to be dedicated to employees of the mountain on or lower income people, or are they going to be, you know, advertised and bought up by Joe Schmo out of Portland as for a second home vacation kind of place? Do you have any idea what's going to happen with that?
I would imagine, I'm just going to throw a guess out there because I don't know who, but generally it's the employees that work up there on the mountain. Maybe elderly people that like to live there, but they can't afford the standard residential type housing.
Like Cedar Glen, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just asking because we're having on my street in particular, we're having difficulty with short-term rentals. The properties are being bought up by as second homes, and all of a sudden short-term rentals come in, and talk about parking. We just had a party down the street and they brought in a motorcycle party. It was a big competition. Anyway, there were like eight, and we have video proof of this. There are like eight campers and motorcycles.
Sorry it's that happened. I want to make sure that I have opportunities for members of the general public to really provide input concerning the specific application here. And
I understand this is just a nuisance, I'm sure.
It is. And it's not just a nuisance. It's a significant problem, you know, if you have short-term rentals impacting your use and enjoyment of your property. But I want to focus on the conditional use permit here for the applicant and for people that want to provide input to that.
Okay.
Is there another member of the public that would like to provide a comment? Let's go ahead with that. And thank you for your participation.
Sure.
Okay, Darcy's on it.
I see Betsy. Is it Betsy and Cody?
Or it's Betsy, Cody.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so you can hear me. Yeah. Yeah, I live down Welch's Road and down towards Salmon River Bridge. And a long time spent, you know, my childhood up here. I live here mostly seasonally now, but been coming to the mountains since the, you know, mid 60s. And anyway, a long time community member that way. And yeah, I'm really concerned about mainly the traffic impacts up there, Welch's Road, and pedestrian safety and bicycle safety. We ride our bikes a lot, and Welch's Road, as it is already pretty dangerous. There's no bike, you know, notices for cars coming, that kind of thing. And that spot between the resort and, you know, we're on lower East Welch's Road, lower down past the golf course, but that spot, you know, once you get to the resort up to Highway 26, I see people walking on the left side where there's not that on the west side where there's not the pedestrian passage. And then I had to pass someone who was in the pedestrian passage that's got the white line on the right side. So I'm wondering if there's any plan with this proposal to, if it goes through, if the conditional permit is granted, if it could be conditioned to provide some pedestrian or bicycle access on that other side of the street. There's partway a path, it looks like, on part of it, but not maybe all of it. And there's not through the existing Mountain View's spot. And anyway, that's a concern. I also have concerns echoed by, was it Deb? I didn't catch the name completely. About water quality. I'm actually a water resources professional. That's my background. And even on ephemeral or intermittent streams, whatever you call them, those streams still have very significant impact for fishes. And that one does go into the Salmon River eventually. And so that's a concern, not only the water quality concerns that would be coming off new development during construction, but long term, you know, you're going to have more surface water pavement there, and that people possibly using pesticides, who knows, on their property, and also then the flow concern. So I don't think it should be discounted just because it's an intermittent stream, because that still provides habitat sometimes at crucial times. Maybe for species that the, you know, salmonids and others rely on. So anyway, I'd be concerned about that flow and quality.
Thank you. Those are legitimate concerns. I heard the applicant describe over 1,000 feet, 48-inch pipe used to detain the water on site while the water is flowing through that creek and releasing it later. I'll look through those recommendations again to see how that is addressed, but it does seem like it is addressed, but it's a legitimate concern. I saw that I'm going to ask Mr. Gish to address the issue of the pedestrians and bicycle safety. I think he has a comment about the future plans for those spaces.
Yes, Ms. Cody. So Clackamas County Capital Improvement does have a plan to widen out Welch's Road from all the way from 26 to the end of it with 38 feet of full pavement, including an 8-foot bike lane on both sides. So, and that's going to start planning, like Mr. Erickson mentioned, we're going to start planning that next year in 2022. And it's scheduled to start construction, I believe, in 2025. This application will be required to complete those improvements now along their street frontage rather than wait till 2025. so those improvements will be including an 8-foot, or excuse me, I can't remember exactly how access path along their frontage, setback also. So pedestrian access will be able to walk down until they hit their frontage, and then there'll be a return, an asphalt return or access to return that comes up and then circles back to the right of way across their frontage. So there will be another 8 feet of pavement added, and then an access way behind that also for the traveling public. So look for that in the next year. We're going to start planning that. And then in 4 more years, then that'll go into construction. So then there'll actually be sidewalks from stage stop northerly up to 26. But all that'll be completed through the county, won't be completed through the developer here. Just their frontage will be completed by the applicant.
Okay. Thank you for addressing those comments and questions about the project. And I'll look to the what I read in the unless we have something specific in addition to what Mr. Erickson already provided, which I understood addressed the water retention on site and the plan for that. No? Okay. Is there another member of the general public that is here to provide a comment?
Would either of the Thurmans like to talk? I see lurking Thurmans, and there we go.
Good afternoon.
So this is Margaret Thurman. Our concern would be that Road E stays in some form or other. We see that as a safety issue for our future development. So I guess we would support kind of redesigning so A does not exist and E does remain. I can't imagine Mr. Minch having to drive through everything anyway, but also that we would have an emergency access, public access off of that road or an easement off that road, because we did have an earlier plan that we've put on hold. And there was an entrance to Welch's Road from that plan for that parcel that we own there. But so we would support whatever keeps E in place. And we appreciate the willingness to change from cedar to chain link, which is more fireproof. When we deal with our stormwater, we can have some kind of gradual lease to the stream also. And I think that's the only thing I have to say, unless somebody has a question of us.
And just to remind the hearings officer, the Thurmans have submitted written comments as well.
Yes.
I had an opportunity to read those. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for your participation as well, and for your written comments, which, as I stated, I've had an opportunity to review, and I will certainly consider. Is there another member of the general public today?
Thurman, Pete, and Deb, let me look. Minch, two Dans. Well, speak now or forever hold your peace. Put up your hand if you want to talk.
Well, as I stated, the record will stay open for an additional 7 days. I will receive, if there are comments from the general public, I will consider those. They need to be submitted within 7 days to provide an opportunity for the county and the applicant to review them, the county to respond within an additional 7 days of that period, 14 days, and the applicant to have the last word, 21 days. If additional time is needed by the county, the applicant, please submit those requests through Mr. Glasgow, and he will coordinate that. Is that clear?
Yeah. Are there any questions? Give me 1 second here, because I want to put up my contact information, but perfect. I can't find it all of a sudden. So hang on 1 second.
Thank you.
Gosh, there it is. Okay, so if you'd like to submit testimony, and this is a seven day situation, anybody can submit testimony the first 7 days. Second 7 days is for rebuttal. The hearings officer can clarify that if I'm doing it wrong. Final 7 days is for final argument, applicant only. If you'd like to submit testimony, you can either mail it to me here, and you probably want to just this mailing address, the file number, we get it to me quicker. Or even faster, just email it, clayg@clackamas.us, and it will become part of the record and be considered by the hearings officer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'll look to this open record period is off, though. I want to remind the applicant an opportunity to work with the county on those conditions of approval. But I'll make a decision one way or another. I'm hoping that there'll be an agreement. That's always to me the better solution, but I will certainly consider what is provided, and I will make a decision in this matter. Okay. Well, thank you all for your participation, and I'll look to review and provide a written decision immediately following the close of this open record period. I believe within 20 days of that 21 day period, if that's clear. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We're all free to leave.